Are you thinking about a career in genetic counseling? Maybe you're already a current student or even a recent grad. Then you have to head over to our social media for a major giveaway right now. We've assembled 15 genetic counselors, including myself and some other familiar faces, voices, if you catch my drift. All 15 of us are going to be mentors for a lucky 15 listeners. That's right. You can meet with us for a one-hour Zoom call for a one-on-one mentoring session. This is a giveaway, so you can just go to our Instagram and Twitter and then my personal LinkedIn, Kira Denine, to enter for free. For an extra 10 entries, that's right, an extra 10 entries, you can leave a rating review on Spotify or Apple. Hey, if you want 20 extra entries, do both. Then email that to info@dnapodcast.com and I will personally give you an extra 10 entries. Again, we're going to have 15 winners, so you've got a really good shot. If you leave a rating review, you tag some friends on social media, you share it on your Instagram story. We're really, really excited for this. I am very passionate about helping people get into the genetic counseling profession. If you couldn't tell already, we have a lot of episodes about this. And just want to give a shout out to GC Prep for being our sponsor for this giveaway. We are so excited. So head over to our social media. There's also a link in the show notes to access the giveaway.
How is it that we find ourselves surrounded by such complexity, such elegance?
The genes of you and me, the genes of you and me, we're all made of DNA. We're all made of the same chemical DNA. We're all made of DNA.
Hi, you're listening to DNA Today, a podcast and radio show where we discover new advances in the world of genetics. From genetic technology like CRISPR to rare diseases to new research, we have you covered. For a decade, DNA Today has brought you the voices of leaders in genetics. I'm Kira Denine. I'm a certified genetic counselor and your host. My guest today is a fellow genetics podcaster, Effie Barks. She's the host of Once Upon a Gene, so that's why her voice is probably going to be familiar to you. The show explores the true stories of raising rare kiddos. The podcast has a long list of accomplishments. I'll share a couple with you. The podcast was awarded Best in Show Podcast by WeGo Health. Podcast Magazine recognized Effie as one of the 40 under 40 podcasters, and she's been nominated for 2 Champion Hope Awards from Global Genes. Thank you so much for coming on, Effie. I feel like I know you, even though we've actually not podcasted back and forth before.
Yes, Kira. Oh my gosh. I'm like, yeah, of course I know Kira, but this is the first time we're making it happen. I'm so honored to be here. Thanks for having me on your awesome show. And thank you for sharing all of that information about Once Upon a Gene. Hopefully we do have some overlap of listeners. You know, we definitely have a lot of nerdy people liking our stuff.
Yeah, we definitely have overlap. And then I was really happy that you reached out for me to be featured on a recent episode, episode 143, that had the theme I'll Never Forget. And you collected all these great stories featuring genetic counselors that shared these impactful rare disease stories. And it was a really great episode. I really enjoyed listening to it. The other genetic counselors were just fantastic on the show. So everybody's got to go check that out. We'll link to that in the show notes. And I love how in your episodes you include Ford's Laugh for those that need a little pick-me-up in their day. So I want to hear more about the little boy behind the laugh. Tell us about Ford.
Oh my gosh. First of all, yes. Stop what you're doing and just go to the last 30 seconds of any episode and listen to that laugh. Like, you will not. I will pay you money if you can actually not smile or laugh out loud on your worst day listening to it. Ford
I have not accomplished that so far. I always smile a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, he's such a funny little guy. We always joke because Casey and I are just like, how did we get like the class clown kid? Because we're just not like that. Yeah, he's so sweet. He's 6 years old. He just started first grade today. He's amazing and he's so willful and always will try to figure out a way to make people laugh. He loves being a jokester and he drives around like Evil Knievel in his wheelchair. It's terrifying. Sort of get used to it. But yeah, he's just such an amazing kid and he's really surprising us over the last couple months even with some of the development that he's been working on, and we're just so in love with that little dude.
Yeah, he's such a little cutie. And it's just been fantastic to hear Ford's story, you know, went through Once Upon a Gene through your podcast, and also just how it affects family and just family life and bringing on other rare disease advocates and parents and everybody that kind of falls under that rare disease community umbrella. You know, looking back in terms of Ford's history, do you remember when you first noticed a sign that Ford might have a health issue, might be atypical compared to other kids when he was that age?
Yes, we actually noticed something was wrong right away with Ford, even though nobody agreed with us. And then later found out through medical records that he did in fact have intrauterine growth restriction. So there were some red flags that didn't ever get relayed to us as parents. But right when Ford was born, he had a really low birth weight. He was like 4 pounds, 9 ounces, and we couldn't get him to latch, suck, swallow, nothing. He basically got zero food for the first couple days. And then afterwards at home, we still had so much trouble feeding him. It would take hours to get a couple ounces down him. And that went on for a few months until finally we got someone to listen and agree that something was in fact wrong with Ford.
Yeah, so I'm sure it was that parent intuition of like, no, something's off. And just oftentimes I hear from so many rare disease advocates, especially those that are the parents and the caregivers, it's like, no, we had to keep fighting and be like, no, something's different. I want to explore this further. I want to understand this to help my baby, my child. And so eventually, kind of fast forwarding, Ford was diagnosed with a rare disorder, CTNNB1 syndrome. So obviously, there was probably a process between what you talked about and then the actual diagnosis. But what is the test that actually gave you that diagnosis? Was there a genetic counselor involved? Of course, I have to ask that because I'm a genetic counselor. So I'm always curious.
Yes, fast forwarding. So at 4 months, he was admitted into a children's hospital, and that got the ball rolling. And, you know, ensued the millions of appointments then on. And eventually, pretty close to that appointment, we did get referred to genetics. And the geneticist was actually quite intrigued with Ford's case because she was very convinced that she had pinpointed what it was just by looking at him. If you look at a picture of Ford, he is extremely pale and white. He has these neon blue eyes, and he, especially when he was a baby, more so. So she thought he had a form of albinism called HPS, Hermansky-Pudlak syndrome, and ordered a whole exome sequencing test. It did not come back with that diagnosis, thankfully, but that's kind of how it went down. It took about 6 months for us to get those results. They kind of got lost in transit at one point with healthcare stuff, you know. So it was a surprise to get a diagnosis at all, and it was also a shock, and it was also like, well, thank God I don't have to worry about the sun and a lung transplant in a decade or so. So there was a lot going on. There was lots of balls in the air about what was wrong with Ford.
That's certainly a lot to go through, and I've heard that from many people, that like 6 months to sometimes get results back, because and this was a few years ago, so I think that's a good perspective. I don't know if that's necessarily the case if for, you know, newborns today and everything that are doing the whole exome sequencing. And for those that aren't familiar, whole exome sequencing is where we're looking at all the genetics that are active and turned on in our body to see if there's any genetic change in there that could, like in Ford's case, lead to a specific diagnosis for a condition. So it sounds like you got that from the exome there.
Correct, yes. The CTNNB1 came back from that. We oddly had a secondary thing pop up on his test, which we're exploring at this point. So maybe you can help me with that.
Maybe. Well, or I'll connect you with a peds genetic counselor. It knows even more.
This is definitely when I felt like such a soft spot in my heart for genetic counselors themselves, because the dynamic between our genetic counselor and our geneticist were so different. And how I felt, you know, just generally supported was quite different. And I felt like the genetic counselor reached out to me so much in offering like ways to help or something. And I never feel like I got that from our geneticist.
Part of it is too, I think, the timing that oftentimes genetic counselors have more
time in their day to be doing that. So we certainly have that luxury, and definitely differs different places. But it's good to hear that you did have a good experience with a genetic counselor and that they could support you through the process and checking in, and that a geneticist was involved. That makes sense in the pediatric setting with everything.
This is a shocking statistic. The National Institutes of Health, or NIH, the world's largest funder of biomedical research, squanders an estimated $200 billion of taxpayer money every year on ineffective animal experiments for human diseases. The NIH reports that failure rates for novel drugs occur in about 95% of human studies, despite showing success in preclinical experiments using animals. Animals and humans deserve better. Which is why scientists for the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, aka PETA, have developed new strategies for replacing the use of animals in experiments with human-relevant methods. Advances in human-relevant research technologies hold tremendous promise to revolutionize biomedical research and usher in the age of personalized medicine, a topic we explore extensively on DNA Today. Head over to PETA.org/New Deal to learn more. Again, that's PETA.org/New Deal. TrackGene has designed a genetics electronic health record. Here's what it features: pedigrees, demographic data, genetics information, risk tools, and sophisticated reporting, all within a clinician-designed workflow. It integrates with other clinical genetic software, databases, and hospital information systems to maintain accurate patient records. Go check it out at trakgene.com. Again, that's TrackGene, without the C.com. And keep your eye out for our full episode interviews with TrackGene coming soon to DNA Today. Did you know PerkinElmer Genomics was one of the first laboratories to offer whole genome sequencing on a clinical basis? Whole genome sequencing can maximize clinical diagnostic yield for patients. With turnaround time of 4 weeks for the proband sample, PerkinElmer's whole genome sequencing test is designed to provide access to additional valuable information compared to an exome. PerkinElmer also offers prenatal whole genome sequencing as well as ultra-rapid whole genome sequencing for critically ill newborns using dried blood spots. The ultra-rapid genome has a turnaround time of 5 days and includes mito, chromosomal CNV analysis, STR-TNR screening, and biochemical analysis. Also, listen back to episode 176 with Dr. Madhuri Hegde, where we explore the power of whole genome sequencing, which also happens to be one of my favorite episodes of DNA Today. And stay tuned for a couple more episodes with PerkinElmer soon. Discover all that PerkinElmer Genomics has to offer at PerkinElmerGenomics.com. Interesting that at least at the time, there was only, 30 other people who were diagnosed with CTNNB1 that Ford was diagnosed with. I mean, how did you begin to even navigate all this? You talked about your mindset once you actually got the results of okay, it's not albinism, so it's this different condition. But then once you wrapped your head around this new condition, I mean, where did you begin?
Yes, I was horrified and, did what every parent does, right? Dr. Google, all the things. Eventually found Facebook groups at this point. So I Googled in there, or Facebook, searched in there, and I came across a CTNNB1 family awareness group. And there were actually 50 patients at this point. So you know how that goes with knowing everything when you're delivering information. And I felt so relieved in that moment, that there were other people and that I could go in there and be like, oh my gosh, help me. So that was nice to have. The kids were all so little, so it was almost kind of a bummer too, because I had all these questions and I was feeling all this stuff and nobody could really give that to me because their kids were the same age practically. There was a couple further ahead at this point, but there wasn't anything to look for. There wasn't any future premonitions of what Ford's life might be like. So while it was nice to know we weren't completely alone, it wasn't super comforting either.
We had Patty Hall on the show, who's a Canadian author, and she shared that it was really helpful when her son was diagnosed with gigantism to be able to reach out to people that were a few years older to see, as you're explaining, okay, what issues have come up down the line that maybe I can prepare myself for, or, oh, wow, developmentally, they've actually hit more milestones, or whatever the case may be, of, you know, both sides of having, okay, this is what we have to look forward to, and also this is what we have to prepare for. So I can't imagine how tough that is if all the kids are kind of around the same age with it, and it is a rare disorder, so it makes sense that you're not going to have that many people to be able to talk to. And some people listening might be like, okay, they've talked about this rare genetic disorder, but how does it actually affect Ford? You mentioned that he uses a wheelchair to be mobile. How else does it affect Ford's body and in general?
A lot. Yeah. So Ford's protein, the beta catenin, he's getting about 50% of the beta catenin protein that his body needs, that we all need for all of his cells to do all of their jobs. The way it shows up for Ford is definitely more severe than most of the children. I'd say him and about three other kids are probably similar. So he has a really severe movement disorder, and, you know, he has dystonia in his limbs. He's hypotonic in his trunk area. So he still can't sit unassisted. He can't crawl. He can't walk, obviously, the wheelchair. He's also never been able to swallow, and all of that function is part of his hypotonia. So he uses a G-tube for his feeding and has since he was 4 months old. Let's see, Ford has microcephaly, so his head is smaller in diameter, and he has eye issues, severe eye issues, strabismus. One of his eyes is kind of stuck now. We will see if we, you know, want to do that whole surgery of putting it back. If that even works, who knows, Kira?
Yeah.
He's nonverbal, although just within the last couple months, one of the drugs that we've upped the dosage on has brought out some words, which is like mind-blowing, and we're all freaking out about it because he's trying to say things now.
So exciting. Wow.
Isn't it amazing? Yeah, so this drug is for his movement disorder that he takes. And then all of a sudden, when we upped it, he started blubbing, and we were like, oh my God. Okay, so I have something to look forward to that I really never expected at this point. I had just assumed, okay, Ford's nonverbal, and that's the way that it is. So things are changing right now that is very cool. But he's really good at his AAC device. It's an iPad that kids use to communicate with other people. And, you know, he's developed a lot of these skills. He's really smart. He definitely has an intellectual disability because of his syndrome. But man, that kid is really, really smart, and his receptive language is just, it's perfection. Obviously, I think that it is selective sometimes, which might just be my opinion, but he has trouble gaining weight, he has trouble sleeping.
But it's great that he has all these tools.
Yes. It's just amazing, and he has so many great therapists at school, especially, that just adore him and really take the time to get to know him and help him develop them, you know, alongside his peers, which is important.
Just, you know, I'm just thinking, like, it's his first day of first grade today. I'm sure that's on your mind and kind of like, okay, when's the bus coming and everything. I think along, you know, these lines of learning about how this affects Ford, going back to when you first learned about this diagnosis, you and your partner, Casey, what are some resources that if you could go back and talk to, you know, that version of yourself in that point in time, if you had a time machine, are there certain resources that you wish you knew about that you would have shared, or when there are new parents in the community that you're like, oh, we really encourage you to check this out, or, you know, a certain doctor or certain health organization, anything off the top of your head that you're like, oh, this is a go-to resource?
Yeah, like a million now, and some that weren't there, one of which I created because it wasn't there, right? Like, that's where Once Upon a Gene was born, is where I was desperately searching for parents like me and to figure out this whole landscape of this rare disease world that I was now thrust into. In the last couple years, it's exploded, and it's so amazing. Every time I see a new, you know, blog or podcast pop up, I'm like, yes, because parents really need that personal connection and they need to build that personal community. Other things I didn't know about and wasn't told about until the digging ensued was things like Global Genes, things like NORD, things like the Every Life Foundation, things like, you know, all of those beautiful hubs that you can go to for support and toolkits and things, and also just to kind of really figure out like where you fit in terms of if you want to do anything advocacy-wise, right? Like if you're passionate about helping to get laws changed or healthcare equity or, you know, rare disease storytelling or IEP stuff, like you really can find these groups now and figure out like, hey, you know what? I'm good at this, or this is actually what I'm passionate about now. And you can jump in. It helps with the stress and the trauma, I really think. And it also just informs you and it gets you deeply entangled in this beautiful community to really help you kind of figure it out and get things done faster and copy people's homework, right? So your job doesn't have to be as hard as the parent before you. Most importantly, though, find your people. Like, find them. I mean, I think I have lots of them for you to find, but really connect with the parents who are living the life that you're living, because they're the ones who are going to be your go-tos for so many of your personal questions, and they're going to know the answers, and they're going to know where to direct you, and they're your best resource, and they're everyone's best resource, including yours, including all industry. Like, the caregivers and the patients are the people that you need to be friends with.
Totally agree. I've had a few different cases as a prenatal genetic counselor where through a procedure called an amniocentesis, we ended up having a couple diagnoses of rare conditions. And what I did as a genetic counselor was, okay, I'm going to find, hopefully there's an organization or some kind of parent group, caregiver group, and see if anyone is willing to chat with me so I can learn more about the condition. And if they're open to it, I can connect my patient with them. And I think that's just so great, because I can't speak to raising a child that has whatever condition we're talking about. And I think that's just, there's so much power in that connection and being able to ask questions that I'm not going to know of what that daily life is like. So I think that's a resource, as you said, for everybody to take advantage of. And the rare disease community is so embracing. It's just such a beautiful community. I can't think of another community like it, to be honest. I'm involved in, you know, over the years, different volunteer groups and everything, and there's some that are great, but there's nothing like the rare disease community. You know, it really is just so strong. And I think you gave some great shout outs. We'll have links in the show notes and our website for NORD, Global Genes, Every Life. Did I get that last one right? Every Life?
Yeah, exactly what you said.
Okay. Yeah, that's a new one for me.
Oh, yeah. You will be embraced and you will be seen and heard, and they will help you. So whether that's emotionally or mentally, or, you know, if you want to take action and start a foundation or do whatever, like, everyone is so tight and everyone is so loving, and like, you will be embraced and you will be helped.
Have you heard of TrackGene? TrackGene is a clinical genetic software solution used by over 1,000 genetic experts around the world. You can customize the front page so it's streamlined to your specific workflow. The intuitive patient information entry page makes data entry efficient and user-friendly. Pedigrees are also easy to draw and document. Here's another vital feature. It supports HL7 integration to be used with other clinical genetic software, databases, and hospital information systems. So you can build custom reports with the simple drag and drop report builder. This has an interface with data visualization tools such as those from Microsoft to make it easy workflow. And there's more features on the way, all designed with you in mind as the genetics expert. TrackGene has an experienced team who's been working in the clinical genetic industry for, get this, over 15 years. You can request a demo for free. Go to trackgene.com. Again, that's T-R-A-K gene, so track without the C, .com. Stay tuned for upcoming episodes of DNA Today, where we're going to be chatting with TrackGene. Support for DNA Today comes from the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, also known as PETA, whose scientists have developed the Research Modernization Deal, a strategy to phase out ineffective experiments on animals with high-tech, state-of-the-art research. PETA has collected an abundance of evidence demonstrating that the use of animals in biomedical research hinders scientific progress and puts patients at risk. Learn more at PETA.org/New Deal. Again, that's PETA.org/New Deal. PerkinElmer Genomics is a global leader in genetic testing, focusing on rare diseases, inherited disorders, newborn screening, and hereditary cancer. Testing services support the full continuum of care from preconception and prenatal to neonatal, pediatric, and adult. Testing options include sequencing for targeted genes, multiple genes, the whole exome or genome, and copy number variations. Using a simple saliva or blood sample, PerkinElmer Genomics answers complex genetic questions that can proactively inform patient care and end the diagnostic odyssey for families. Learn more at PerkinElmerGenomics.com.
And another question I wanted to ask you about is you have another child, Esme. Am I getting her name right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. So how was it adjusting to life with a second child? I mean, I think a lot of rare disease parents, especially if they're firstborn, like for you, has a rare disease, they might be in that process of deciding, okay, do we want to have a second child? What this might look like for our family and what's the impact on our current child that may have the rare disease? Can you share a little of your experience, advice you may have for parents that are, you know, having these conversations right now?
For me personally, I knew that I wanted a bigger family. So it was almost like non-negotiable for my husband and I to not have another child, that we wanted to give that to ourselves as parents who, haven't really had the opportunity to experience what we thought we were going to experience. So selfishly that reason. Also, we wanted a sibling for our beautiful son, Ford, and we just didn't feel like it was complete. I felt safe in that CT and NB1 wasn't something that was passed on to Ford. You know, it was a de novo. It was just a fluke. So I knew that it was the same possibility that anyone had on having Ezzy, right? I didn't have some percentage staring me in the face that something could definitely happen. So that was reassuring. I did have a CVS?
Yep, you got it.
It was sort of an amniocentesis, but not really. And they did actually send it to Baylor too to see if CT and NB1 was in there just in case. Who knows? Never say never. But yeah, once Ezzy came around, like, it was just, there was so much more light, you know, and Ford was enamored by her. And I've already seen the person that she has become at a three-year-old age that I can't even believe. And she's going to do amazing things in this world. I know she is. And she keeps us on our toes. And I do joke about this, but I'm dead serious. Like, I could be Ezzy's mom with my hands tied behind my back at this point compared to Ford. So when other parents call me and message me about, like, how afraid they are to have kids, like, they're totally not going to be as hard as your rare kid. Like, I promise. Like, no matter what anybody says, like, if you want to do it, like, really think about it and reach out to parents of rare kiddos who have done it and get their thoughts. But my opinion, it only makes your lives richer. It only gives more love in your family. And you're creating people who become allies for people like Ford, which we need a lot more of.
Yes, that is just beautifully stated. And you're one of, what, like 14? You come from a huge family. You have a lot of siblings, right? So it makes sense you wanted a bigger family. I remember, like, reading that and I was like, you've got a lot of siblings. Wow, that's like a geneticist's dream to have these big families. How does genetics play out in everybody? So I just remember reading that and I was like, wow, that's really interesting.
Yes, one of 13. You can study us anytime.
Yes. Okay. Amazing. Who knows? Might take you up on that. And I wanted to congratulate you and your family on Ford's feature in Beyond the Diagnosis. Can you share a little bit about this display, how it happened? I mean, I just saw it on social media. I'm like, this is really cool.
Oh my gosh, isn't that so cool? Okay, Patty Welton, what an amazing mom and advocate. She has daughters with EDS, and she started this foundation called Beyond the Diagnosis, where she gets artists to paint the photos of these beautiful children who have rare diseases, and it's a traveling art exhibit. So Patty's mission is to, you know, reinforce that there's a face and a person and a beautiful child behind these diseases, and it's not just code, and it's not just a name, and they're not just a patient. But look at Ford and his wild hair and his one, you know, wonky eye. Like, he's so amazingly cute. Look at these kids that you're doing this science for. So they travel to medical schools and industry, pharma companies, and they get put on the walls with a little blurb about these kids. And these people who are actually working on these diseases in one way or another get to see their faces, and it just makes such an important impact on the work that they do. And, you know, I think it just gives them so much more humanity behind these names of these diseases and everything. Patty's amazing. Everybody should check out Beyond the Diagnosis. Yeah, I just submitted his name. So if you want to like think about doing it, go to beyondthediagnosis.com and fill out the form to maybe get your kiddo's rare disease in that art exhibit. They don't ever tell you that your photo got chosen until it's completely finalized. So it's a really big surprise when it happens.
That kind of makes it more exciting almost. Be like, wow, it's here. Like, I didn't even know it might happen. Yeah, that's really cool. We'll link to that in the show notes as well. Yeah, it's just a fantastic thing. And I think about when I was working in the lab, you know, you don't meet patients. You don't know whose samples you're working on. And it is really cool to be able to say, oh, wow, this kid on the wall has the disorder that I'm researching or that I'm working on samples to diagnose or something like that. It's just, it brings that human element to it that I think is so important, because sometimes in the lab you're like, okay, next, next, next. And you're just like moving samples along, and it's nice to pause and say, wow, I'm making an impact. And this is who I'm impacting. Or, you know, people like Ford, right? So just really, really exciting to see that.
Yeah. And it changes everything. I mean, you Google things still. It's getting better now with advocacy foundations just like revving up and rare disease being so exciting right now. But the photos that you Google before when you search for the syndrome of your kid, they're horrifying. And it's not something that any parent should have to Google and see. And it's not realistic all the time. And our kids' faces deserve to be updated in the literature and in everyone's mind who's working with these kids.
Yeah, completely agree. There was a photographer that I met when I was in grad school in New York, and he runs Positive Exposure. I don't know if you've come across them. And he takes pictures of people with lots of different disorders. Rare diseases are certainly included. And it's really to replace those terrible, as you mentioned, like textbook photos where you have people with that bar over their eye to de-identify them, over their eyes. And usually it's like, you know, they're standing in their underwear and then they've got like, you know, brick wall behind them. It's just, it's so kind of grossly clinical. And it's just so refreshing to see Beyond the Diagnosis, Positive Exposure, you know, bringing a way different light to that. So I hope when people are Googling, parents like you, you know, 6 years ago, that are seeing more of these images and less of those old textbook. I think we need to phase those out. So yeah, that's definitely a really great, important point there. And it was cool. I heard this summer that you attended a rare disease family meetup. Tell me about that. What is the experience like actually being in person with other rare disease families?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So CTNNB1 had like a mini Middle America meetup, and there was under 20 families there. And I got to meet some CTNNB1 families for the first time. And I joked about on my podcast that I'm going to create a game called Is It Ford or Is It a Girl? Because they're identical. I mean, these kids all look like siblings. It's bananas. And it was just, my cheeks hurt so bad. I was smiling so much. These kids were so similar. You know, they all sounded the same. They all moved the same. And they all just had the best time. And being in a room with parents who know exactly what your life is like is, you can't explain it. The level of comfort and just like, you just feel so at home and you feel so connected to these people and they're your family.
I mean, especially with, you know, all the kids really looking like their siblings, I'm sure that even brings another level to that feeling like family. And I mean, just, I can't imagine what beautiful immediate connections that you have with people and hopefully relationships that you can continue on. And, you know, especially with COVID now, you know, being on, don't want to say that it's over, but being on the other side of it now, 2 years into it, almost three, I guess, at this point, of being able to have these meetups and everything. Because I know for years, people in the rare disease community were not doing that. And I'm starting to hear a little bit more of it.
Yes.
But, oh my gosh, Effie, thank you so much for coming on. I mean,
oh my gosh,
you're just
yeah.
Such a light.
You're the best. And like, I've always meant to tell you, because I'm like, damn it, Kara, I like cannot ever get the theme music from your podcast out of my head. Like that music and like Dave Jackson's podcast music, like they're the podcasts I listen to, and those songs are always stuck in my head. So I'm thinking about you all the time. Thank you for having me as a guest on your awesome show.
That's amazing. Oh, I mean, it had to happen. Like, there was no way we were both going to just keep going and not have each other on each other's shows. So, no, thank you so much. Y'all have to check out Once Upon a Gene. Go listen to Ford's beautiful laugh. So, and I, as you said, I challenge you not to smile while you hear it. It won't happen. So, yeah, everybody go check that out. I listened to it on Spotify. You guys can listen to it. Really, any podcast player, I've seen it pop up everywhere. So yeah, awesome. Well, thank you so much again.
Yes, Kara, you're the best, and congrats on your awards for your podcast too. It's amazing. You do such a great job.
For more information about today's episode, visit dnapodcast.com, where you can also stream all episodes of the show. We encourage your questions, comments, guest pitches, and ideas. Send them all into info@dnapodcast.com. Search DNA Today on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, so you can connect with us there. And a favor, please rate and review the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. This truly helps us climb the charts and allow more genetic nerds like yourself to find the show. DNA Today is hosted and produced by myself, Kira Dineen. Our social media lead is Corinne Merlino. Our video lead is Amanda Andrioli. Thanks for listening, and join us next time to discover new advances in the world of genetics.
The genes of you and me, the genes of you and me, we're all made of DNA. We're all made of the same chemical DNA. We're all made